Welcome to the Jewish Exponent Podcast. I am your host, Jared Safran. I am here today with Sach Zahr of the Israeli Consulate in New York City. Your official title is the Deputy Consul General. Is that right, Sach?
Yes, that's correct. Thank you very much, Jared, for having me.
Yeah, thanks for being here. Appreciate it. So, the role of the Israeli Consulate in New York City is to build relationships with Jewish leaders and political leaders in five northeastern states. Is that correct? Pennsylvania is one of them.
That's correct.
Yeah. Okay. So we want to ask you kind of about those relationships and starting with when you meet with northeastern politicians and community leaders in the US, what do you tell them? What does Israel need today from Jewish leaders and Jews in general in the United States right now during this difficult moment?
So first of all, we try to reflect to them what's happening in Israel, in Gaza, what is the Israeli perspective and narrative of what's happening. Because what happened on October 7th is a national trauma that it's not only a trauma for the Israelis or for the Jews. It's more than that. It's a global trauma because what was done, the atrocities that were committed against Israelis and Jews, and by the way, non-Jews and also non-Israelis, were unprecedented, and maybe the worst since World War II. And the fact that they were documented and spread in a specific intention, deliberate intention to terrorize, unfortunately, they succeeded with it. It makes it so terrible also. And this is for us what's happening now. They have started an existential war, because when we look at all fronts, it's not just the Gaza Strip, it's Gaza, it's Lebanon, I mean Hezbollah from Lebanon, it's Syria. We see missiles and attacks against Israel in our northern borders from Syria, Shiite militias in Iraq, and of course the Houthis in Yemen. So we're talking about an existential threat that in many ways is also orchestrated by Iran, and we are trying to reflect that to our allies in the United States. And when you were talking about the Jewish community or about Jews, American Jewry, the fact that the consequences of the war in the United States is also a crazy rise in anti-Semitism, which is an incidence, is the fact, and also the language. We see that the masks are off, what people allow themselves to say about Jews. We see online. This is very, very, very disturbing to say the least. And this is a danger not only to Israel or to the Jews, it's a danger to the American society because it starts with the Jews, but it never ends there.
I think many American Jews are aware of the existential nature of the situation. They're certainly aware of the rise in anti-Semitism here in the US. You were saying before we got on about how there are a lot of details on the ground that have been misreported, right? And you try to give an accurate accounting of the situation. Is that right?
Yeah, so our only tool is the truth. There's the narrative, which is our point of view of how we see what happened. You know, even ceasefire, for example. There was a ceasefire until October 6th. Israel withdrew from Gaza in 2005. There's no Israeli presence in the Gaza Strip, not civilians, not soldiers since. And the war, the October 7th massacre, took place in Israel, in the Jewish communities around Gaza, what we call the Gaza Envelope communities. And this represents a perception of ideology, by the way, genocidal ideology, of Hamas, which is not hidden. They say it out loud, that they would want to see their state from the river to the sea, which means ethnic cleansing of the Jews. So we are trying to reflect and to show and to put it very clear what our enemy is saying. And when I'm talking about data, for example, information and storytelling has a lot of importance in this battle, in this war. Because let's take the Al-Ahli Hospital incident, for example. There were reports 10 minutes ago, there was Israeli bombing, and the Israelis bombed the hospital, and they killed more than 500 people. And you saw it immediately on all media outlets. There were also almost immediate consequences, because the president of the United States, President Biden, he planned a visit to Israel 2 days after, and there was a summit planned in Jordan, and then it was canceled. The summit was immediately canceled. We also saw condemnations from very friendly leaders condemning Israel for that. And it took us more than 5 hours, I believe, just to say this is not us. It was, of course, a missile that was misfired by a Palestinian Islamic Jihad, but it didn't matter. It didn't matter, and we have to be credible. And we waited a few hours, not just until we can be sure that we are not the ones who did it, but also that we can prove it, that it will be clear. So we had footage, and we could say, this is not us, this is somebody else. But we already had to had consequences. And I said it before, like, how can you even count 500 bodies in 10 minutes? And the fact that the media outlets based their report on a press release or on a statement of a terrorist organization that has just committed the October 7th atrocities is very, very, very alarming.
Well, in media outlets in the United States, they cite Hamas for these figures. I mean, the New York Times, for example, the biggest one, perhaps. Should we rely on that? Or are there numbers from Israel we could get?
Yeah, I can tell you that our estimation is that around 13,000 Hamas terrorists were killed since October 7th. For the rest, I don't know how
That's
many.
almost half of the casualties.
That's almost half.
Yeah.
Even if around 30,000 people have died, so we say almost half of them are Hamas terrorists. What about natural deaths? What about look, of course, and we know, and this is very unfortunate, that there are innocent Palestinian civilians, including women and children, who lost their lives. For us Israelis, it's a tragedy. We won't see in Israel these kind of videos of people going through the streets and being happy to see the loss of innocent lives, like we saw in Gaza Strip after October 7th.
How does the Israeli consulate, the Israeli government, define a Hamas terrorist? Like, when you
Sorry.
say 13,000 of them are Hamas terrorists, like, who's a Hamas terrorist?
Hamas terrorist is someone who is fighting actively against Israel or involved in a terrorist activity that we can prove.
Yeah.
And I started to say that what we're trying to do is to minimize as much as possible civilian casualties and innocent people who lost their lives. And for us, it is indeed tragedy, whether it's Palestinian or Israeli. But we should not forget, and this is exactly the narrative, who puts these innocent people in danger and in this situation? Because when Hamas is heavily embedded within civilians and hiding its missiles in mosques, in schools, in hospitals, they are the one to blame.
Mm-hmm.
Why they want to blame? And again,
Yeah.
talking about the narrative and reflecting the of the reflection of the Israeli narrative. When people are talking about ceasefire, they think that we support ceasefire. We want ceasefire tomorrow morning, and it can be achieved very easily when Hamas releases the Israeli hostages and when they surrender, because we cannot live with the fact that they would be able to commit the capability, that they have the capability to commit these atrocities of October 7th ever again, because there's a threat. Yes.
What else is being misreported besides the amount of casualties who are not Hamas terrorists? Are there any other numbers that Americans should get from, say, yourself or the Israeli government, as opposed to the Hamas-run health ministry or some other Hamas source?
No, I'm not saying that the numbers specifically are being misreported, because look, this is war is bad. War is a
Yeah.
nasty thing. And again, let's not forget, they started an unprovoked war against Israel. So I'm not saying that the numbers that are reported are not are incorrect. It's
Yeah.
very hard to to count exactly, because war is complicated. But what we can say, that according to our estimations, 30,000 Hamas terrorists were killed since October 7th, and we know that there's a number of innocent Palestinians who lost their lives because of the war. Yes, and this is bad, and this should not be happening. But but there's someone who should be held accountable for that, and this is Hamas. And this is Hamas. And when we're talking about, again, I started talking about the ceasefire. Ceasefire is a good thing. We want to have our hostages back. We must make sure that Hamas surrenders and we have them back, and we can have a ceasefire tomorrow morning.
Yeah,
because
but
when Hamas is not able to, because when if Hamas is not able to commit these atrocities ever again, this is one of the goals of the war, and we see the goals of the war the same with the Americans.
Yeah,
Both
you
in both bipartisan, by the way.
You present that as if it's a doable scenario, and I think maybe perhaps the release of the hostages is eliminating Hamas and preventing something else like it from rising up. Not so, perhaps not so doable. So what is the long-term strategy then, if the goal is to eliminate Hamas? What comes after that?
Well, elimination of a terrorist organization is a very is elusive, is some kind of an elusive term, because how do you eliminate a terrorist organization? I
Yeah,
can
that's what
assure
I'm saying.
that
So what comes after that?
even if we reach a ceasefire, we will see still the day after one or two or several missiles shot at Israel. Trust me on that one, because
Yeah.
they want to show that they are still able to do that.
Yeah.
Because you're dealing with terrorists, there will always be a terrorist in this area or in that area that has still in his house a couple of missiles or
Sure,
mother
that was my
that he can
point. So
shot
what's the
that he can
long-term plan then?
yeah yeah
Yeah.
yeah but being able to break their ability to control the Gaza Strip and their
So who controls it after them is what I'm asking.
Sorry?
Who controls it after Hamas does?
I can assure you one thing. After the war is over, it will not be Israel nor Hamas. We don't want to be there. We left the Gaza Strip in 2005. We
Yeah.
need to find, we need to find a, or it's not our job or our capability to create some kind of a regime thereafter, but we do need the international community. We do need our neighbors. We do need our partners to take part in this effort to make sure that in the day after, the Palestinians in Gaza Strip will be able to have their own government, which is not a terrorist organization, that does not pose a threat on Israel, and that is not capable of doing what Hamas did on October 7th.
They elected Hamas, so why wouldn't they just elect either Hamas or another version of it?
Hamas is an they oppress their own people. You see how they use them as human shields in
Yeah.
this war, and it's not as a cliche. You
Is that
see,
how they got into power, you're saying, in the election? Yeah.
yes,
Yes.
of course.
Okay.
But you
Yes.
see how
Yeah.
they impress their own people, and it's not very easy for them to resist. Of course, there's a, we have to be honest with ourselves. There is a support for Hamas, a popular support for Hamas in Gaza Strip. Now we see it is changing a little bit
Yeah.
because they see what this oppressive, genocidal terrorist organization is doing to them, not just to Israel. And we start see some resistance of Palestinians in Gaza against Hamas.
Yeah.
But people are afraid. People are intimidated by it, but you
Yeah.
see what they're capable of doing.
How do you create the conditions then for the Palestinian people in that territory to elect some more benevolent regime?
First of all, our mission, as I said, our mission is to secure the safety of Israelis.
Yeah.
And the only way to secure, to make sure that our people are secure, is to make sure that Hamas is gone. And again, we spoke about what it means to eliminate Hamas. Yeah, we
Yeah.
will not eliminate or eradicate their ideology tomorrow morning. But let's say the core of their capabilities, we will fight and we will make sure that they do not control. Afterwards, we'll have the time to talk about the day after. They
Yeah.
are, again, but for that we need partners. For that we need the international community. We need our neighbors. We need our we need moderate Arab countries to step in and to help to solve the situation and
Yeah.
to bring a better future to the Palestinians in Gaza Strip and for Israel.
So Americans have been pretty unconditional, not pretty, they've been unconditional with their support for Israel during this conflict. The Federation, Jewish Federation of Greater Philadelphia has raised more than 15 million for Israel since October 7th. But I do feel that such strong support gives American Jews some say in Israel's strategic objective and long-term plan. When you are talking to Jewish communal leaders and political leaders here in the US, how do you make the argument for what is now going to need to be what looks like long-term support? This is not going to happen tomorrow. It's probably not going to happen next month. So what do you say to people? Because that's they've already committed a lot, and now you're essentially asking them to commit a lot more for the foreseeable future.
Well, I'm not asking. I cannot tell people what to do or what not to
Yeah.
do. The only thing when I speak to Jewish groups, organizations, or communities,
Yeah.
I'm telling the Israeli story, and I think. I mean, the level of support and solidarity is because Israel has a very important inherent place within the Jewish identity of American Jewry. And the fact that people are supportive, that they want to act, is not surprising. I mean, it's of course not something that I'm taking for granted, but it's not surprising because people are connected to the state of Israel. People understand the story. People understand the fact that if the state of Israel is facing an existential threat, it has immediate implications on safety of Jews outside Israel, diaspora Jews, but also because this is part of the history of the Jewish people. This is the homeland of the Jewish people. This is the only Jewish sovereign state in the world. So it's not surprising. And I'm not going to, you know, I'm not asking people to donate or to do things. I'm just, in light of the rising anti-Semitism and people think because anti-Israeli and anti Zionist group and anti-Semitic groups, because they are so vocal and violent, by the way, we need to be vocal and we need to speak out. We need to be proud of who we are and what we are and what we think and what we support. And that's the most important thing.
What message do you hope Jewish community leaders and even non-Jewish political leaders take back to their communities and constituencies after they talk to you?
So I said, just be proud, speak out, don't be afraid.
Yeah.
Because otherwise people would think that that's okay to say what they say, or people think that because these anti groups are, because they're more vocal and because they're more violent and because their protest is more reported about, that maybe they are the majority. And they're not. They are not. That's why it's important to react, to say what you think. And I know it's not easy because people are paying price for, unfortunately, for being pro-Israeli, also for being Jews. This is what anti-Semitism is all about. You see it. You see what's happening on campuses.
Yeah, makes sense. Sachzar, thank you for joining us today. Appreciate it.
Thank you, Jared. Thank you so much.